Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We need to understand a little bit more about this fourth wave. Is it coming? We're taking a look at what's happening in the Netherlands, in Germany, in Austria, all of them reacting just a little bit differently. But either way, they are experiencing a fourth wave. We need to try and understand what that means for us here in South Africa. And of course, we've always said that one of our advantages is that we are a couple of months behind the rest of the world, which gives us the opportunity to be able to learn from the experience that other countries are having. Professor Adrian Puren, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Good morning. How are you?
All right. Thanks very much, Howard. And the jacarandas may be starting to fade. And are we ready?
Yeah. Are we ready for? Wow. I love that metaphor. Professor, you see, this is a better slot for you. That whole 10 to 6 sometimes that they drag you onto my show is way too early. Quarter to 9 is absolutely comfortable. Am I right? You're definitely much more poetic this time of the morning.
Indeed, yes. I'm more peppermint patty at 6:45, I think.
Absolutely. All right. So, metaphorically, are the jacarandas going to be fading? Are we absolutely expecting to see a fourth wave given what we're seeing happening in Europe at the moment?
I think it's a possibility, Howard, and I think there are some complexities that I think that we need to take into account. I think the one thing that we have been saying constantly is that the constant for the moment is that the Delta variant is still there, in circulation. There's no evidence of any other variant that has that ability in terms of transmissibility and immune evasion. So that's the constant currently. But as you know, things could change. We've had a really large resurgence that third wave. So there are a number of people that have been exposed, are infected, will have antibody responses, and I would think that the majority of those, I hope, would be protective. Mm. So I think, and we've been avoiding the use of the so-called herd protection or herd immunity, but I think that therefore is a contributor to that. And of course, we have the vaccine program that is ongoing. However, as you know, the vaccine program is not to the extent that I think we would all like to see it in terms of trying to reach that goal of that 70%. Of course, as we discussed, it's really higher than that we should achieve. Again, we're entering this phase of greater mobility and contact over the next few weeks. And so I think all those particular factors may combine to us to see resurgence. But maybe we'll see resurgences that are different across different provinces rather than seeing one just huge resurgence. But I think you're right. I think we need to look at countries that are vaccinating, but not vaccinating to the extent that they would like to vaccinate as well. I think Austria is a good example of that. I think where they are starting to look at things such as lockdown, actually, again, for their population. Whereas I think in the UK, It's very different. So there are these different approaches that one can consider. But it's also important for us, I think, to have our systems ready. So I think there's a lot of effort going into, preparedness around, hospital capacity, bed capacity, ICU capacity, staff capacity. And very importantly, I think as well, although it's still seen as part of a trial, is the boosters for healthcare workers. I think has started already.
Yeah, it has started.
So that's an additional level of preparedness.
Austria has taken, is the first country to ask for lockdown for unvaccinated workers. Is that something that would ever be considered, or for unvaccinated people, not workers, is that something that would ever be considered here in South Africa?
Well, I think we have so far really a voluntary system, and we have the Disaster Management Act still in place. So again, and it's a risk adjustment process. So again, we could, scale up and or down as we've done. We're not level one. So I think, based on if the numbers, and again, it's not clear what those indicators would be for changing the risk adjusted levels. But if there are inflections in terms of the increase in numbers, And again, if that reflects onto the hospital system and deaths, then of course, I think then you would see again that those readjustments come into play. Mm. I think what we would like to see possibly in South Africa is that dissociation, if you like, in terms of, yes, the numbers will increase, but the pressure on the hospitals and the mortality are low. And I think that's the sort of scenario I think that we really would like to see. So we would accept or tolerate infections, but hopefully those infections will not translate into increases in hospitalizations and deaths.
Mm. Is this something that you're observing overseas in terms of, I know that in Holland, in the Netherlands, there were 60 last, end of last week, there were 16,000 new cases a day. But are they seeing lower hospitalizations and deaths because of the vaccines?
Yes. No, in fact, I think the UK is also another good example of that. I think there was some nice graphics in the Financial Times illustrating that dissociation, if you like, of increases in cases, but not in terms of hospitalizations and deaths. I know that the NHS still feels it's under pressure, though. And I think the additional concern, at least in the UK and the other areas in the north, are, you know, is flu making a return? Is the influenza virus, that is, making a return? And will that complicate matters? I know that we're seeing some influenza cases, I think, have been reported, but the nature and extent of that, I think, still needs to be more well described.
So at this stage, in terms of the anticipation, do we have a view as to when our fourth wave will actually occur, assuming it does?
Yeah, I would think that the speculation is really more around after December, I think sort of January, February time, again, because of the lag, because the height of contact periods will probably be in later December, when everybody closes down on the 15th of December. So that heady onrush of people will, if that does lead to an increase in cases, will reflect really in January and then spill into February.
Mm.
But again, yeah, those are what is speculated, and we'll see what the modelers come up with, whether or not that will hold, and whether or not we'll see a heterogeneous picture that we did see in the third wave, similarly, and the extent of those curves and the likelihood in terms of pressures on hospitals and outcomes.
Mm.
So this is, as I said, it's a good period now for provincial departments of health to take stock as to where they are at, and really be prepared, but hope that it's not to the same extent as we've seen in the first, second, and third waves.
And at this stage, we're not seeing any variants of concern that we need to keep an eye on?
At this time, no. So Delta, not only in South Africa, but worldwide, is still the dominant variant. There are other variants, of course, in circulation, but not variants that are, if you like, competing or out-competing the Delta variant. I think it's likely that we will see changes, but maybe within the Delta variant in and of itself, possibly. But there's the C, I think it's C21.2 is also in circulation. It does have mutations that lend itself to even more virulence and escape. But we haven't seen that becoming a dominant. I think it's still about 4% in South Africa. So it's really critical that the molecular surveillance is maintained, and that we really ensure that we can detect fairly early on if there are any changes around that particular variant. That'd be critical.
Professor Adrian Apuran, Acting Director of the NICD, thank you as always.